This call is being recorded.
Baby and Megan, do you want to take it away?
Yeah. So I'm Katie Rawson. I'm the English librarian here at Emory, and we wanted to welcome you all on behalf of the DLF Forum Planning Inclusivity Subcommittee to this webinar. The Inclusivity Subcommittee is committed to a forum that's welcoming and empowering for everyone who attends. To that end, we've worked on making inclusive spaces at the upcoming conference, and also to promote inclusive conference going practices, which is part of why we're here today. So today we'll be having a conversation about creating accessible presentations with Carly Spina, and then a Q&A with Chelsea Roll and Eleanor Dixon, who helped develop the DLF's Guide to Creating Accessible Presentations. And so, Megan.
Yes, good afternoon, everyone. Can you hear me? Looking at chat to confirm. Yes, great. I'm Megan Musoff. I am Program Manager for Library IT Services Training and Assessment here at the University of Michigan Library, and it is my pleasure to introduce Carly Spina to you today. Carly Spina is the Head Librarian for Assessment and Outreach at the Boston College Libraries. She holds a JD from the University of Chicago Law School, an MLIS from Simmons Graduate School of Library and Information Science, and a Master's in Education from the Harvard Graduate School of Education. She has extensive experience working, writing, and presenting on topics related to accessibility and universal design, and has served as a coordinator for services to patrons with disabilities. She was the inaugural chair of the Library Information Technology Association's Diversity and Inclusion Committee, and is leader of the Association of Specialized and Cooperative Library Agencies interest group on library services to people with visual or physical disabilities that prevent them from reading standard print. She regularly teaches courses, workshops, and webinars on topics related to accessibility, universal design, and technology. So I'm pretty excited about this presentation. One quick thing before we're going to wait to the end of Carly's presentation to answer any questions. And when Q&A starts, you're going to have two options to ask questions. One will be to enter questions into the chat box. And your second option will be just to unmute your microphone and go ahead and ask a question. And at this point, turn it over to Carly.
Thanks, Megan. Hopefully everyone can hear me. And I am just going to go ahead and share my screen as well. One second while I figure out again how to do that. Let's see if hopefully everyone can now see my presentation. But let me know via audio if at any point you can't don't see my slides. So today I'm going to be talking about sort of some of the key steps that you can take to making presentations accessible, with a focus on how to make slides accessible. But a lot of what we'll talk about will apply to sort of the environment as well. So if you don't do slides with one of the main programs, you'll still learn a lot of tips, hopefully, that will help you along the way. So the first and most perhaps important thing I will tell you during this entire presentation is to please use the microphone. No matter how much you think you don't need the microphone, which everyone always thinks that, whether you are one panelist, whether you're the sole presenter, whether you're somebody asking a question, everyone should use the microphone for a few reasons. One is just generally in these large rooms, sound is often dampened and it just doesn't travel as well as you think. So everyone in the back is probably having a hard time hearing you. But particularly for any attendees who are hard of hearing and for anybody who is interpreting your presentation, for attendees who may be deaf or hard of hearing, it's likely that they're struggling to hear, and that the way to make it most inclusive for them is to just make sure that you're speaking directly into the microphone, at all times, and that if that's not possible during the question and answer period, that you are repeating the questions into the microphone before you are answering it. This is also important if your session will be recorded, obviously. So there's a lot of good benefits to this. And I think it's a tip that really I like to share with people as the biggest thing I can tell you, because it's really easy to do, but still something that's a continual problem at conferences. So this, now we're going to just sort of walk through the process of setting up a PowerPoint presentation or Google Slides presentation or something similar that is as accessible as possible. And the first step is one that people may not even think of, which is actually to start by setting up your document and selecting a language. Now, the reason for this is to ensure that screen readers can read your presentation. You need to be sure to set the language of your text so that if someone's primary language is Spanish, for example, it will recognize that it's not trying to read a Spanish language document, but in fact that this document that you've shared with it is English or whatever language your presentation is. And this is generally pretty easy to do in most programs that support making slides. In PowerPoint, it can be found in the Tools menu, as shown here, under Language. In Google Slides, there's a similar option, but it's found under the Files menu. And that's where you want to go to change it in Google Slides. But for that, it's likely already going to be whatever the default for your account is. So in Google Slides, you might find that it's already set to what you want. In other programs, there's usually something similar, but if there isn't, you might want to indicate in a note at the beginning, if there is a notes field in the beginning of the document, something that the screen reader will be able to read just so that the person who's using your slides will early on have the note to tell them, oh, this is the language that I can expect the text to be in this document. From there, the next piece of setup that you'll want to do is all about building a strong structure. And this is something that I think a lot of people don't bother with when they're doing slides, but it can be very, very helpful. And this is also something that is a transferable tip for creating accessible documents of all sorts. What you want to have is you want to have your styles defined, and you want to use them in this way so that you've got the various levels of text to make it easier for someone using a screen reader to navigate. If they want to get a sense of what's on the page, their screen reader will allow them to read everything at a particular level with skip jumps generally. And that means that they can go through quickly and see what all the first level information is, rather than having to go through every piece of text on the screen in order to find out what the slide says. So you're going to want to do that in anything that gives you that option. So this shows you how to do it. This slide here shows you how to do it in PowerPoint, but it's something that you can also do in anything else that you want as well. And once you've set the style, it'll be easier as well for you, because then every time you start a new slide, it's going to adopt the same style. And if you need to go back and make a change, like you find out later on that something isn't high enough contrast, you can go back and change it in a single space. Along with this goes the hierarchy, which is also kind of what I was mentioning, which is making sure that you have an outline structure that you're following, and that you're following this based on what the content means rather than merely what size the text is. So generally speaking, when you're using either the master formatting or the hierarchy, the rule of thumb is much like in web design, for those of you who are familiar with it. You don't want to pick a level simply because that's the type of font you want, that's the size of font you want. That what you really want to pick it for is because it conveys additional information. So two things that are in the highest level text here should not only have the same style applied to them, but should also have the same weight of importance. So think of it again as an outline that you're doing. And keep in mind that this will make your slides more easy to parse visually for someone who may have any sort of cognitive limitations. It'll make it easier to interpret from a distance.
And I used the most generic template that they have.
Mm-hmm. Is anyone hearing audio in the background? Sorry.
Banner.
Perhaps not. Okay.
And then,
well, I mean, maybe it's just my machine has been back for some reason.
No, I'm hearing it too.
Oh, okay. So
It looks like
I
that.
I think maybe somebody unmuted and didn't realize it. There we go. As I was going to go back to what I was saying, generally speaking, higher level text should be larger. So impairments to see the major points of your slide and to be able to tell visually, okay, these are the top 3 points, even if it's difficult to read. Going along with making the slides accessible for someone with visual impairments, you should also make sure that none of your font should be smaller than probably 24 to 28 points, and generally the larger the better, because that will just make it so much easier for everyone to read, not just people with visual impairments, but people who are way in the back. It's just generally a great tip whenever possible. The next piece of this, and most important for someone who's using a screen reader and also not necessarily particularly well known, is to make sure that you have the different items on your page in a particular order. Screen readers generally will read content in the order in which it's presented to them. So you should consider what order that is when you're talking about visual layers. What you're seeing here on the screen is I created a slide, and then I'm looking at all of the different visual layers of information. And you can see that my header is one layer, a piece of text is another layer, an image is another layer, another piece of text is a separate layer, and so on and so forth. And if I go up to the Arrange menu in PowerPoint, and in a moment, well, I guess we won't actually look at it, but I will tell you that you can do similar things in other slide presentation software. Basically, you can just reorder these objects. So I would suggest, generally speaking, the easiest thing to do is to create the slide the way you normally would, because it can be difficult to make sure that things end up in the correct order based on how you add them to your slide. And then afterwards, just click on reorder object, and it's a simple drag and drop to just select what you would like to be first. And this will end up with you being able to ensure that someone first comes to the title of your screen, then comes to the text, then to the necessary image, or more likely alternative text to that image if they're using a screen reader, and so on and so forth, rather than having them come to a random piece of content on your page first just by virtue of what layer it was put in. This feature varies a lot across tools, but most tools will offer something like this. This is shown in PowerPoint, but most tools will offer something like this. And if you have any questions about that for specific tools, I'm happy to provide more detailed advice in the Q&A or after the fact. So now a word about choosing fonts. So some do's and don'ts. I already mentioned that you should use as large a font as possible. You definitely want it to be something that's visible from every seat in the house. You want to think about people who don't have the right glasses with them. You want to think about, as much as possible, people who are having to sort of crane their neck to be able to see your slides. So you want it to be something that's going to be, easy to see. You want to avoid fancy fonts or too many different types of fonts. This can be more difficult for people with certain types of visual impairments. It can be difficult for users who have different cognitive stressors at any given time. And it can also just generally be a little bit harder for anyone to parse. So you want to think about your slides from far away, maybe even put your try projecting your slides once and see whether your fonts are really interrupting the experience, because the fonts shouldn't probably be where most of the style comes from. You really want them to mostly just be clear and readable. As I mentioned, have a clear hierarchy of font sizes and have that locked in for the entire presentation. Don't fill your slide with a lot of fine print. That's really common advice that everyone, I'm sure, knows, but it's just a good reminder. Even if you have a lengthy amount of text that you want to say, use the notes field or have your own separate notes rather than putting it all up on the screen, because a screen filled with lots of fine print is a screen where no one can read any of it. At least if you put just the outline or a few key words in big type, then people can read it. Don't use font color as the sole way of conveying meaning. Keep in mind that people may have color blindness, but also if you're not using your own machine, you may not know exactly how it's going to project. So sometimes it might be really hard if you're using two similar colors to really be able to see the difference, even if no one's colorblind. So I would recommend that you try to stay away from that. If you're going to use something where the color conveys a meaning, make sure something else does this too as well. That could be a texture. So you could have hash marks through some of the font that is a particular color. Or it could just be that you divide the page up in some other way visually. And don't choose a font color that blends in. We'll talk about contrast more in just a moment, but just think about that more generally too. If you must use font colors and you want to be able to differentiate between the two of them, make sure that they're different enough that that's going to be realistic, and think very carefully about why you're choosing to do that. So I mentioned contrast and low and high contrast, and now we'll go into a little bit more depth about that. So low contrast images, text, and themes make your presentation really difficult for audiences to read. And this is particularly true for audiences that have certain types of visual impairments, but frankly, it's true in a lot of other settings too. If you use low contrast font and are unfortunate enough to be in a presentation space that is also quite dark, you'll find that nobody can read your slides. And you may want to go with super high contrast, such as black on white or white on black or something of similar high contrast. But at a minimum, you're going to want to make sure that you're not doing something that is going to blend in too much. And the way you can tell this is using online color contrast checker tools. They're mostly designed for websites, but you can easily check the color that you want to use. There's a lot of different tools out there for it. I have a link to one at the end of my presentation that I recommend, but you can find lots of others as well. And you can even find tools out there that will suggest color palettes. If you're not someone who really enjoys trying to pick a color palette and you're concerned that you're going to naturally gravitate towards things that are low contrast or even that you just think other people won't think are attractive, there are tools out there that will just generate a color palette for you and assure you that it's high enough contrast. So that might be another route to consider if you are thinking that you don't want to have to deal with this a lot and you'd rather just outsource it sort of to a tool. So I already mentioned making sure that you don't just rely on color to convey information, but that is something that people often think of with respect to font, but may not think of when they're putting up their graphs, tables, and charts. I pulled these two examples from Penn State's accessibility site, which is overall awesome. And if you have any accessibility questions, they always have great information. But I wanted to highlight this in particular because you can see exactly what I was mentioning here and sort of the do's and don'ts. They are basically showing on the left-hand side exactly what you should do. Even if these all look the same to you, even if we reproduce this graph in black and white, it's going to be quite clear what the words go with because it's the line that it's closest to. And it's also going to be quite clear that each one has a different type of line that's going to indicate which one it is to the viewer. That's really important, and it's even more important when you're doing a display on a screen because not only are there not the options to offer other accessibility supports, but also the screen often exacerbates problems with conveying information through color. Common other examples of where this comes up are when you're using, for example, something like red and green to show good and bad. It can even come up in certain instances if you're showing pictures of your own institution. If you are taking a picture of a sign or something and that sign itself has underlying color problems, keep that in mind as well. You might want to provide additional verbal support then for your audience and explaining what it is that they should be seeing to make it a little bit more seamless and make sure that you don't lose anybody who's colorblind or has visual impairments. Another thing that you'll want to do with all images and anything sort of that falls in the image category. So I'm including within that also things like charts, graphs, anything that is not text pretty much, is you're going to want to include alternative text, or called alt text. And basically, this is what the screen reader reads instead of saying, here's a picture. For most tools, if you don't say anything, so for example, when I uploaded this screenshot to my PowerPoint, and then I opened up the alt text tab, it just said screenshot, the time at which it was taken, .jpg. That's not very helpful to anyone. So what you're going to want to do is every image that you add to your slides, you're going to want to go into the format picture option, which is in the edit menu. And the last option says alt text. And this is where you would add in PowerPoint. In a minute, we'll talk about Google Slides. But this is where you're going to add alternative text. So there are two places that you can put text here. You can put a title and a description. So the way it works with the screen reader, generally speaking, there are a lot of different screen readers. So everything I'm saying about screen readers is sort of generalized for most of the standard screen readers. And the way it works is that it will read the title first as a quick intro to what it is. And then if there's more that you want to convey about that image, you can put that in description, and the screen reader will give the person the option whether or not to hear the longer description. That might be something that you want to do. An example of that that I, a clear example for that would be a chart, for example. Charts typically, and we'll talk a little bit more about that, in the next slide, but charts generally are more difficult to create. And so somebody might want to just know that it is a chart rather than having to go through and hear every single detail about the chart if they're just going through quickly through your presentation, or if they have the slides up on the screen as you're presenting and they don't want to get too far behind. Alt text is really important, sort of as I mentioned, because the other problem with adding screens is that sometimes you are adding pictures is that sometimes you won't actually have anything pre-populate this when you upload an image. It should generally, but that only works as well as most software automatically works. So every once in a while when you open this, you might find that the title is actually completely blank. And keep in mind that that means that it's going to be completely invisible to the screen reader generally. Any image you add that has nothing there is just basically going to be jumped over, practically speaking. So you're going to want to make sure that you don't ever just go in and delete the name and forget to add back in an actual description. You're always going to want to have a description here. In Google Slides, the process is somewhat similar. To add alt text here, you select the image, and then you go to the last option in the format menu, which you can see way at the bottom there. It's alt text. You may find that you have some problems with that if you are using a small screen device, scrolling all the way down to that option, but it is the bottom option on the screen. And then it's going to give you a pop-up, seen to the right here, which gives you, now you're seeing something very similar to what you saw in PowerPoint, which is you can put a title or you can put a more lengthy description. Now, I've told you how to create alt text, but what should your alt text say? Alt text should generally be written to convey whatever is important about the image in the least number of words necessary to convey that information. So for example, if you had a picture of a book, what is important about that image would vary based on the context. So if you were using the image of the book to illustrate a point about the illustration on the front cover, you might say, image of a book with a portrait of Joan of Arc on the cover. Or you might even go into a lot of detail. You might talk about who, that might be your title, and then the description underneath might say who created the portrait, what editions of the book it appeared on, pretty much any level of detail that you would either expect your audience to already know just by seeing that cover, or that you would be planning to in some other way convey about that cover. If you were using the image, however, to show the type of book, you might say image of a paperback book, approximately half an inch thick and 5.1 inches wide and 7.8 inches tall. And that tells you sort of what does this book look like, because now we're talking about the form of the book. So basically, you just want to make sure that whatever you're trying to convey with this image is what somebody who can't see the image and isn't hearing your description is going to be able to take away from it. If an image is important enough to include in your slides, it's probably going to need alt text. And that's something that is worth thinking about, and that is something people talk about a lot, because if an image is truly purely decorative, some people say, well, you can skip the alt text then, and you might just say one word. But I encourage people to sort of think about why they're including it if it's not important enough to have alt text. You really want to make sure that everyone has an inclusive experience of your presentation. So you want to make sure that whatever the experience you want people who can see your images to have is also the experience that people who use a screen reader have. And it may be the case that this image is, in your mind, purely decorative. It's not really conveying anything. But then is there something else you should be doing with that space? Is it making the presentation more visually cluttered in a way that might be problematic for some people? And the answers to these aren't always going to be easy, but it's something that you may want to think about. In addition, if you either don't have a description field or for some reason can't use the description field in whatever program you're using, another possibility about adding additional details for your alt text without sort of getting the screen reader caught reading a huge description of the image is to add that in a note field of your slide. This is an option that people frequently use when we're talking about something like a chart. So I mentioned I was going to come back to charts. Describing a chart is extremely difficult. If you need to do that, I would encourage you to look online at some examples, because you need to really think about how you're going to describe to someone who can't see the visualization that you're talking about, the nuances that you're conveying with that visualization. And some of that is about thinking what you're going to be conveying. So if you're showing a bar chart, maybe the title tells you the trend, and then the description field tells you more detailed what the X and Y axes are and what each of the bars levels is, and that information in a great deal of depth. Sometimes that can overwhelm the description field, or sometimes you won't have access to a description field. And in that case, you can use the notes and just have under the description something saying "see notes." Or for really complicated visualizations, what some people do is they actually put that information physically behind, in the layer behind the image, so that to people viewing your slides, it looks like they're just looking at the image. But then to the screen reader, you'll also still have a note saying, see the text below, and then it will come to the text that's beneath the image afterward. That's a little bit more, in my opinion, of a complicated or can be confusing if you're not careful about your layers solution, but it is one that people use. And my only tip if you decide to go that route is to be sure to include a note explaining where you've included the text to someone using a screen reader, and to make sure that you position the text correctly so that even if your image is displayed slightly differently when you're actually giving your presentation, you're still able to make sure that the audience doesn't actually see them trailing around the edges, which can be another small problem depending on how you set it up. For those of you who intend to integrate audiovisual content into your presentations, there is some unique difficulties or unique things to think about with that. The first and most obvious probably is captioning video content. Everything should be captioned if you're going to put it up in your presentation. This can be tricky. because if you're trying to show someone else's video, a lot of platforms don't offer a way to caption someone else's video. For example, I can't go on YouTube and say, oh, hey, I really like that video that doesn't have captions, so I'm just going to go in and caption it myself. If that's the case, if you need to use something but you don't have the ability to caption it on the screen, you can do a transcript, but I would encourage you to think about whether there are other alternatives you could use first, because in a presentation setting, a transcript is particularly, I think, difficult to make workable. Confirm that your captions are readable. If you are presenting in a new environment, I would encourage you to maybe even see if you can test that before you present. A lot of times, captions are at the bottom of the screen, and if the presentation isn't set up properly, they'll be trailing off onto the floor, onto a wall behind where they're distorted, or just generally they won't be very readable. So it's a good thing to keep in mind. And if you plan to show a video before your presentation, also think about how it's going to be experienced by any audience members who can only hear it and cannot see it. You can do audio description for visual content for this, which is basically, it's similar in some ways to closed captioning, except the idea is that the video has an audio track that plays that gives the highlights of what's happening on screen, what is most important to understand about what is happening on screen in brief descriptions. And if you're interested in including closed captions or audio description in your video content, I have included a link at the end of the presentation to Cadet, which stands for Caption It and Description Editing Tool, which is a free tool that supports adding these elements to your videos. It's a great thing to think about for your library or institution's videos more generally outside of the context of your presentations. But I will say that in some ways, you may be better off, depending on how much of the visual content is important in anything you're showing, you might be better off just doing some sort of a brief introduction in a presentation setting. And the reason for that is because audio description might be something that isn't as easy to understand or follow for someone who's not used to it, who's in your audience. And you may find that you have a lot of people who don't have any visual impairments who actually can't see the screen very well just because of the way things often end up in presentation spaces due to height differences or whatever. And so it's often worthwhile, just for inclusion more generally, to try to give a quick overview that acknowledges that some people might not be able to as clearly see your screen if you're playing important video content as well. So more generally, I just advise keeping it simple. That will in many ways keep it accessible. Avoid densely packed text or visuals. That's often going to make it less comprehensible to someone who is visually impaired, who might therefore be looking at smaller visuals or smaller font. It's going to also help people who have certain types of cognitive issues to be able to not have to try to parse through all these visuals in one place. Same thing with distracting animations or transitions. Make sure your text is on the screen long enough to be read. That's a little bit less of an accessibility concern and more of just like a general tip, I suppose. But if you actually intend for your audience to be reading the text, make sure that you're leaving it up there for a comfortable amount of time. And that if you're a fast reader, you're not assuming that everyone who is in the audience is going to be able to read it quite as rapidly as you have. And I think the thing to keep in mind there is that it might seem like a long time to you because you've read that text so many times, but if it were new to you and you were really considering it, how long would you want it to be on the screen? Give your audience a chance to consider complicated content before you speak. So this is another one that definitely has accessibility and inclusion issues tied to it, but I think it's just generally a good tip for good presentations as well. If you are putting up a complicated visualization on the screen and then just launch right into talking about it, talk about it for however long, and then take it off the screen, that's not going to be a great experience for a lot of people. Maybe you need to give an introduction as soon as it's on the screen. That's fine. But definitely take some time to just allow people to contemplate any really complicated content that you put up for a moment without anybody talking, and just to sort of sit and look at it either before or after you say what you have to say about it, because I think you'll find that people will find it more rewarding that way. Explain acronyms, jargon, and idioms. I think that's a really important tip for all of us. You know, not everyone's going to be coming from the exact same background, so it's really good to make sure that we're being inclusive in that sense too. You want to make sure that everyone feels like I understand what's going on and I'm not being excluded by sort of a wall of jargon and acronyms coming at me. Responding to questions, I wanted to talk about this specifically because I think that this can be a little bit tricky to think about how to manage this. I think that there are some things that can help to make this process more accessible for a lot of different people and just more generally inclusive. If it's possible, though I know it's not always, answering questions throughout can be helpful for people, I think. It can help people who, for whatever reason, can't write down questions that might forget their questions. It can help people who are having some sort of issue that might then keep them from enjoying the rest of the presentation, whether that's a technical issue like saying, can you please speak up, or whether that's a more, you know, content-based question, like not really understanding the point that you were getting at. If you answer those questions throughout, I think people just feel more comfortable and perhaps have more of an ability to get the most out of your presentation. If possible, allow for questions in multiple formats. So some people might not feel comfortable asking a question in front of a large crowd, but they might feel comfortable writing or typing a question that is then asked of the panel. So if you have a way that people can submit questions during the presentation in a written or typed format, that can be a great way of encouraging participation from a wider group of people. And sort of similarly, I think, you know, just offering as many ways as possible to ask questions. If you have a microphone that you're asking everyone to walk up to, for example, think about whether that's going to be a problem for people with mobility impairments and whether there might be some alternative that you can offer for them, even if you don't offer written questions. Could there be one mobile microphone that people are walking around with? And if you are limited to having simply one stationary microphone for questions, think about, and this might not be something that presenters always have complete control over, but see if it's possible to make sure that that stationary microphone is in an accessible location. So think about, you know, is it someplace that's near where people who need accessible seating will be sitting? Is it someplace that someone would have space to approach it if they were in a wheelchair or using some sort of an assistive device? Those are the sorts of questions you might want to think about to make sure that your question and answer period is accessible. And I mentioned it earlier, but I will mention it again. Repeat all questions into the microphone. That's also really key. So sharing your slides, I'm going to go through this a little bit more quickly, but I know that everyone has an opportunity to share slides for this conference, and I think that's really great. DLF asks that you share them on their instance of OSF meetings, so this is geared a little bit towards that. You should share your slides before your session, if at all possible. I definitely understand and have been there with you editing until the last second, but even if you have to make last minute couple of changes, it's good to have a version up before your session so that if there's somebody who has a visual impairment or needs to use an assistive device to navigate through your slides, they have the option of checking it out before they come to your session. Give your files a clear descriptive name. Offer multiple file formats if that's possible for maximum flexibility. Different types of screen readers like different document types, more or less. If you can only offer a PDF in particular, make sure that your PDFs are accessible, which is not necessarily an easy task. So we'll talk about that in a second. And consider the accessibility of any other shared files, even if that means saying that you can be contacted if people need help. So PDF accessibility. I could do an entire session on PDF accessibility because it's quite difficult, but I'm just going to do a couple of quick points. Accessibility means more than OCR or readable text. It also means tagging content in Acrobat and then going through and checking accessibility with a screen reader or an accessibility checker. And it's often possible to take an accessible file and convert it into a PDF that retains some accessibility features, but it's not foolproof and it's not easy always. So you would still want to run an accessibility checker if you really decide that that's the route you wanted to go. Because of all, here are resources that will help you with this process if you decide to go this route. It'll walk you through how you can make a PDF more accessible. But because it is a complicated process, my general recommendation would be that you should focus on creating an accessible document in a file format that's probably easier for screen readers to work with, like Microsoft Office or something like that, and then share both the file formats unless you are somebody who's already done a lot with PDF accessibility or it's something that you're interested in learning more about. If you decide you want to do an accessible PDF, I'm happy to answer questions about it. It's just something that takes quite a bit of time, I think, to understand fully and to go through all the steps for it. My final thought for you, probably not surprisingly since I've already brought it up several times, is use your microphone. No one is so loud that they do not need a microphone. So I would definitely recommend that you do that. And I'm happy to answer questions now. And if you think of some later, you can always get in touch with me. And reminder that there's a Slack conversation on this topic on Tuesday, October 3rd at 2 p.m. Eastern time, which I'm sure the organizers can give you more information about. And now I'm going to stop sharing my slides. Well, I will say you should download my slides if you want to use any of these tools. And now I'll stop sharing my slides so I can see if there are any questions.
So just a quick note about our Q&A. We also have Eleanor Dixon and Chelsea Rowell with us, who can also answer questions about DLF's Guide to Accessible Presentations. And we'll be looking in the chat box for people who want to type their questions. And then also you can unmute yourself and ask questions.
This is Carly. Should I answer questions now or wait until after Chelsea and the other person speak? I'm fine to do it either way.
Hey, Carly, do you want to go ahead and answer the questions? I think we had quite a few that came in through the chat.
Yeah, I saw it. I just want to make sure I don't take up too much of the time. So apologies in advance. Just tell me when I should stop and answer questions offline later. So I'm going to go probably a little bit in reverse order based on sort of how I was able to see the chat once I stopped sharing my screen. Paper handouts as well as online handouts. I didn't get into handouts a ton, but the important thing to keep in mind if you do paper handouts is to indicate somewhere where someone would navigate to an online version of that. It would be great to have a shortened link so that if you end up having to tell it to somebody, and it would be great to have it maybe even in an email that you can quickly shoot to anyone who asks for it or post it as part of the notes field in your slides when you put it up. Basically, anything that will help anyone with any need for an assistive device to be able to get to the electronic format would be helpful. I didn't get to talk about how to make accessible handouts, but if you use a Word document or a Google document, many of the same principles apply in terms of structuring your document and using the right language setting and those sorts of things. So you'll find a lot of that stuff in the same location. If you are going to have a lot of links, I think that in that case, offering an online one would probably be helpful to anyone just because it's not fun to have to sit down and retype all the links, even if they're shortened links. But if you have paper handouts, that's fine as long as you have other alternatives as well. So I got a question about explaining how the reading structure works with a screen reader. And again, there are a lot of different screen readers, so everything is going to be slightly different. But the basic idea is that it's navigating in the order that it comes across content on the page, but it can tell, can detect when you've applied structure to your page. So the most traditional example of this is sort of the outline structure that you can apply to an HTML page, for those of you who are familiar with web design, where you sort of have a highest level header and then a next level, next level, next level, next level. It's very much like a paper outline that you might do as well. And the screen reader will allow the user to say, I only want to read things that are header level one. And so if header level one is used only to indicate an outline of the content on the page, whether that page is a handout, whether that page is a website, or whether that page is a PowerPoint slide, if the user can say, I only want to see the level one heading stuff, and that's all the important outline, that's the backbone of what's on the page, that's very useful. If instead that heading one designation was just used because the person creating the document liked the font that was associated with it, it can give a very skewed picture of what the page is and quickly become unusable. So that's why you want to make sure that you're using that structure for true structural reasons rather than as a style replacement almost. Is there such a thing as an accessible word cloud generator? There are word cloud generators that display the number of occurrences of the word, I believe, not, though I haven't seen them in the word cloud themselves, but I don't think that even those have the option to show that in a way that would be accessible to a screen reader. So I guess maybe my question would be in response to that, which types of accessibility you're thinking of in this case. I think for a word cloud, if you had the information about how the word frequency, I would recommend just putting that in the description field behind the word cloud, or even as a table on the same page or an additional page that people could look at optionally, but not. You can also do hidden slides if you want something to be available when people download content, but not necessarily during your presentation. Because I think it would be hard to find a word cloud generator. I don't know of any that are fully accessible. Okay. Reading an acronym out loud is a good thing to do, especially if you're telling people what it means. And one other thing about people with dyslexia that I forgot to mention when talking about fonts really quickly, there are a few fonts out there that will bill themselves as friendly for people with dyslexia, but I haven't seen any research that says that that's very definitive. Everything I have read has been a fair amount of skepticism that works for everyone. So that might work for some members of your audience, but I wouldn't necessarily recommend using one of the fonts of that sort and then thinking you've completely made it easy, either for your presentation or when you're doing things for accessibility purposes outside of this setting. There really isn't one thing that makes everything easy for every single person who has dyslexia, from what I understand. How can you include the speaking notes in the PDF? So that is a little bit tricky, because the way that you would do that is to print to PDF probably, but that often isn't the most accessible way of creating the PDF. I might actually recommend creating the slides and then separately adding in the notes text to the accessible PDF once you've already started to apply the accessible structure to your PDF, or just offering them as a separate document. I will say that the notes field, if you share it as a slideshow, the notes field will be, generally speaking, I've always heard that that's accessible, so I don't think that'll be a problem. The question about the tools for color palettes. Someone responded and shared an example, which I think is one of the ones, Oh, no, this isn't one of the ones I've used, but I can share one of the examples in the Slack channel for where we're going to be on Slack next week. And I'll ask the organizers if there's someplace else that it can be posted after this. I'll find the one I have used before. Are there any other questions on my portion? I want to make sure I leave plenty of time for the other portion. Okay, well, if anybody has questions later on, my slides are available, so you can go back through them. And I tried to use the notes field to give a sense of what I said. And you can also email me, contact me on Twitter, or else I'll try to come into the Slack channel probably later the day of the actual chat to answer any other outstanding questions. Thank you very much for having me, and I hope everyone's presentations go well.
Thank you so much, Carly. This was really wonderful. We will continue to answer questions. And also we have with us, as I said, Chelsea Roll and Eleanor Dixon. Chelsea Roll is the Digital Scholarship Librarian and History Liaison at Boston College Libraries. And Eleanor Dixon is the Digital Humanities Specialist for the HathiTrust Research Center based at the University of Illinois at Champaign-Urbana. And both of them worked last year to build a really wonderful guide to creating accessible presentations for DLF, so they can also answer any of the questions you might have and might want to tell us a little bit about the guide.
So this is Chelsea. I at long last figured out how to unmute myself. I will just say that when Eleanor and I worked on the guide to creating accessible presentations, we also worked with Yasmin Shoresh. And I think that we were, we were educating ourselves as we went. So we didn't necessarily have the deep expertise that Carly had, but, you know, we're librarians and know how to find great information. So yeah, I'll just leave it at that. We figured out as we were going along, and it has definitely deeply influenced how I try to think about creating presentations. Now, Eleanor, do you have anything to add?
Hi, this is Megan. I'm not sure if we're waiting for Eleanor to say anything, but I will just sort of jump in here and say that I just posted in the chat a link to where you will find the slides and eventually the recording of today's webinar. So that's in the chat there. And then one of the last things we want to remind you, and it's come up a couple of times, thanks to Carly, is that there will be a follow-up conversation on the DLF Teach Slack during their office hours. And that is October 3rd from 2 to 3 Eastern time. And I'm going to put some more information about the DLF Teach Slack channel in the chat for this. There you go. Any other final questions before we wrap up?
Thank you, everyone. It looks like Carly put in some color palette tools, and I'll put that up on our website too with the link that Megan just shared.
All right, well, let's call it a day. Thanks again to Carly and Chelsea and Eleanor and Katie and everyone that made this happen and everyone at DLF, and look for the recording.
Thanks so much, everybody. Goodbye.
Thanks, everybody. Bye.